Good morning, everybody, and hello to my fellow Earthlings. Welcome to the second episode of The Considered Life, the podcast about how to lead a meaningful and intentional life that you truly own. It's another beautiful sunny Friday morning here in Switzerland. This is Mark. I'm your host on your journey to your considered life. And now, without further ado or any advertising, let's just jump into it. I hope you enjoy. Let me start with thanking you for the feedback and the encouragements I got. Adrian, and she writes on LinkedIn, I have read your article yesterday about why we fail, and I must say I can resonate at every level. It was very interesting to read about the decision disconnect, and she goes on, like, I am also thinking we often don't execute because we self-sabotage our capabilities and don't believe enough in ourselves to be capable of doing things that are bigger than us. That's what I call the Mount Everest syndrome, and we are going to talk about it in one of the next episodes on this very podcast. Then we got another feedback from Fabian, and Fabian says, I caught myself thinking I should go back to the gym. It was all well planned, but I have a surgery coming up. Well, Fabian, let me tell you this. Over the past about 30 years, since I am doing sports and I'm living a pretty active life, there was not a single year, I have to admit, where not something happened that got me out of the rhythm. And I do relate absolutely how difficult it is to get back in. So, Fabian, if you're listening to this, all encouragements from my side, just get into it, hop into your gym stuff, and head over to the gym just for doing like 10 minutes or so just to get back into the rhythm. That's really, really important. In the last episode, I talked about the decision disconnect, which occurs when you have a disconnect between the point in time when you decide on doing something and the point in time when you have to execute on your decision. So we found that the brain is in two different states. You have a shift in priorities. You have certainly a different focus of attention and a different emotional state. So I provided four strategies to overcome the self-sabotaging. And I encourage you strongly to listen to the first episode in order to understand a bit more about how to overcome that decision disconnect. In 1972, Stanford psychologist Walter Mischel offered 16 boys and 16 girls in the age range of 3 years and 6 months to 5 years and 8 months a marshmallow. He also told them that they could have 2 marshmallows if they just waited for 15 minutes alone in a room, not eating a marshmallow, just sitting in front of them on a desk. So far for the oversimplified and partially twisted story told. Well, who hasn't heard about the marshmallow experiment by now? In reality, there was a prior experiment with animal cookies and pretzels involved. The marshmallow experiment was eventually conducted in 3 different experiments, and marshmallows were only part of the story. There were pretzels involved, as well as toys available to allow the kids distracting themselves from the object of desire. This discrepancy between what really happened and what is told is a good example of oversimplification or model building that is part of human nature. I, however, think that many issues, conflicts, and generally speaking, erroneous behaviors that we observe in the modern world are a consequence of inappropriate generalization, simplification, and such model building. One could argue that simplification is a necessary process. And well, seen from the angle of evolutionary benefit, I would agree. It is a required mechanism to cope with the complexity and unpredictability of our world nowadays more than ever. However, simplification of complexity that results in plainly wrong conclusions and drives undesired and erroneous behavior, in my view, poses a huge risk to the individual and to the society as a whole. But let's close this parenthesis and return to the original topic, which were marshmallows. The basic principle of the marshmallow experiments was always the same. Get a small reward now or a larger reward later. Environmental conditions were changed between the three experiments with differences in procedures. More specifically, the children were given various opportunities, or none, to distract their attention from the object of desire. Some with toys, some with mental tasks. Now what do you think the kids did? As you may have either heard by now or suspected, some did eat the marshmallow within the time span provided. Some did not eat it and rather waited for the larger reward at the end of the 15 minutes. But why? Imagine yourself given the choice between $100 in your pocket right now or $120 in 4 weeks. You would either take the $100 or wait for 4 weeks to walk off with the $120. And your choice depends on what? A follow-up study was performed in 2011. It involved part of the original 1972 test subjects, then in their mid-40s, and neurofunctional imaging. Part of the conclusion of that study reads, and I quote, "Whereas the prefrontal cortex differentiated between no-go and go trials to a greater extent in high delayers, the ventral striatum showed exaggerated recruitment in low delayers. Thus, resistance to temptation as measured originally by the delay of gratification task is a relatively stable individual difference that predicts reliable biases in frontostriatal circuitries that integrate motivational and control processes." End of quote. Translated into plain English, that means people's ability to delay the reward is based on the activity levels of the prefrontal cortex and the ventral striatum in their brains. The prefrontal cortex is the brain region behind your forehead, responsible for mediating intellectual and executive functions. The ventral striatum is part of the limbic system, located at the core of the brain, and is involved in the processes of reward, motivation, and decision-making. Now, unsurprisingly, people who perform better at delaying rewards expose a higher activity level in the prefrontal cortex, as that brain region is involved in inhibiting impulses originating in the limbic system. Arguably, this is a highly simplified representation of hugely complex and only partially understood brain processes. May the neuroscientists forgive. Now, how does this translate into real life? As a matter of fact, in our civilized, educated, and highly complex life, immediate reward is a scarce resource. We work to be paid at the end of the week or the month. We learn every day for 6 months to pass a language exam. We expose ourselves to countless varieties of impediments and fuck-ups for months to deliver a project, just to get a handshake and a 200-word mention in the company journal at the end. We sweat every day in the gym, on the bike, on the treadmill, and you can put your favorite object of self-inflicted pain here to lose all that superfluous body fat gram by gram over months and months. Yes, immediate reward is rare, and sometimes reward is even invisible. Following a supposedly healthy lifestyle, running, hiking, working out, eating healthy, staying away from alcohol and other drugs, limiting or eliminating coffee, another fancy drug, and chocolate, meditating, journaling, conscious breathing, yoga, for what reward? Staying healthy and living longer. Useless if you're hit by a bus tomorrow. The lack of reward translates equally to the consequences or threats. Similar to the rewards that lose perceived value the further they are in the future, threats lose their fear factor. We all know that smoking significantly increases the risk of cancer. Not wearing a seatbelt significantly increases the risk of dying when involved in a car accident. Not completing the presentation today will fuck up your work plan for the rest of the week. Not preparing the requested report with the required diligence will result in not only an unhappy boss, but also in an inefficient marketing strategy. Now you may think, yeah, but well, he's talking about procrastination. Sorry, wrong answer. I am talking about not procrastination, but rather about one, if not the key reason for procrastination. That is the disconnect between current priorities due to the relative loss of significance of the outcome. Behavioral scientists have coined a name for this phenomenon, and they call it intertemporal discounting. Much research has been done about this topic, and it's known by a number of different names by now, for example, reward discounting or hyperbolic discounting. At the end, it all means the same. What you'll get later is much less relevant than what you get right away. Most of the studies I have came across are rooted in the field of behavioral science or behavioral economics and are focused on the reward discounting aspect. What I get next year is less valuable than what I get today. However, throughout many years of coaching, I noticed repeatedly an important other facet of the same pattern. That's what I call loss discounting. Taken to the extreme, and a pretty revelatory one, I want to refer to the loss of your own life. Your own death. I know that sounds a bit very extreme and strange, but we all know that one day will be our last one, don't we? We have all heard intelligent, kidding, quotes such as, "Live every day as if it was your last one." Why would I spend every single day contemplating my life? That's what I would do on my knowingly last day. However, every single time I take, willfully and with explicit consent, a client on the journey to her last day and let her contemplate her life, I get a holy fuck moment. That contemplation rarely results in a peaceful state of mind filled with accomplishment and satisfaction where people would say something like, "That was awesome, and now I'm ready to pass on." More often, they go like, "Crap, I didn't live fully. I did this and that, and it wasn't in line with my values. I should have done this or that more often. I should have taken better care of my spouse, close friends, kids. I should have had deeper relationships. I should have worked less." In short, it demonstrates the perceived gap between the true desires and the actual actions, the actual lifestyle. Interestingly enough, I have not once heard somebody say, "Oh fuck, I have not bought that new Apple Watch," or "I never had a Bugatti Veyron." There lies a huge gap between what we think is important in the present and what people regret when we truly face death. Suddenly, we realize that life is not about having or owning things, even though we spend significant lifetime chasing precisely these things. In short, ignoring the fact that intertemporal discounting, reward discounting, loss discounting, and death discounting is continuously distracting us from what we would consider relevant at the end, will lead to drama when it's too late to remedy. Now, what can we do to navigate around this trap? Let me refer to this quote. "Let us prepare our minds as if we'd come to the very end of life. Let us postpone nothing. Let us balance life's books each day. The one who puts the finishing touches on their life each day is never short of time." Quote end. This is Seneca urging in his moral letters to Lucilius. In the Stoic school, this is called memento mori, remember that you must die. I started, without knowing how it's called, nor it dated back to the Romans, This practice following the near-deadly shooting I survived in Syria when I was just 14 years old. Remember you must die is a thought that I'm telling myself frequently, and I ask myself the question, how would I feel about this looking back from my deathbed? Well, clearly this is not a call to question every single decision we take and every single action by placing them into the frame of what is contributing to our lives and humanity. It is, however, a call to ask ourselves whether we are living our lives as consciously and considered as this most likely single instance of our experience here on Earth deserves. It is also a call to rethink our divergence from rationally and well-planned courses of action when it comes to going to the gym, finishing the difficult presentation, responding the challenging phone call or email that we have placed into our calendars in a lucid moment and now spontaneously skipping them because we suddenly feel like it. It is a call to exert control over our emotional and short-sighted desires that aim at immediate reward by browsing through the 800th cat photo or fail army post on Facebook. It is also a call to rethink our practices of discipline and ownership of our own lives. Memento mori. I hope you enjoyed the second episode of the Dartcast and encourage you to head over to the website markkillian.com, find me on LinkedIn, find me on Facebook, and just subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter to receive high-value information. As always, I'm looking forward to receive your feedback. And, well, hear you next time.